Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit villageofbedfordpark.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Tuesday afternoon, August 25th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The Noon Business Hour is sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. Travelers are venturing farther off the beaten path in search of culture, discovery, and smaller crowds. We'll talk about that in our next segment. But first, a proposed O'Hare flyer could transform Chicago travel, carrying passengers between downtown and the airport in just 15 minutes. We welcome in Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University in Chicago. Joe, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. The 15-minute express train to O'Hare, to downtown from O'Hare, has been long sought dream by city officials. It was something Mayor Daley wanted to get done in time for the 2016 Olympics if Chicago were awarded that competition. There's a big empty rail station beneath Block 37 as a lasting tribute to that vision. But now a private company wants to step up to the platform, and what have they proposed?
It is pretty exciting because unlike these earlier proposals, of course, Elon Musk came to town and sort of started, a circus with ideas that weren't really grounded in practicality. Now we have a proposal that's just the opposite. Off-the-shelf technology, essentially use existing rail lines. There's a line west out of downtown that's barely used for some freight service. And then other routes up to O'Hare where the line would then go on aerial pylons. So it can be done without a lot of complexity. Of course, it's not cheap, but it's far more doable than some of the past proposals. So this is going to generate a lot of excitement.
Now, what is the difference between this and the temporary service that existed on Metra during the Democratic National Convention 2 years ago, where the trains between Union Station and the O'Hare Transfer Station by the airport ran on an hourly basis? It was a shuttle service.
Yeah, that's right. That was sort of putting our toe in the water and testing out a new service to O'Hare, something better than the Blue Line, which makes so many stops and has other drawbacks. And that, showed that there was some real possibilities there. But the multimodal center, the Rent-A-Car Center, wasn't really designed for trains. So you have to walk around the building and so forth to get to the trains. And the travel time is, of course, much longer. So this 15-minute travel time is really a bit of an eye-popper. And yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of people, take the bait when it's hopefully when it opens.
If this actually works, the 15-minute shuttle service would leave from O'Hare's Terminal 2 and also put Chicago in rare air, pun intended, Joe, for airports that have that shuttle service with a rapid link between the airport and the Central Business District. There are a number of airports in this country that have some sort of public transportation, but as you point out, it's a very similar service to the Blue Line.
Well, that's right. You remember, we are a great global city, and we rank highly on those world indices that do our importance and the corporate activity and culture. So not having a better link to the airport has long been a liability for us, for our city. So we've had lots of discussion about it. I think what we're looking at here is an entity that's done a lot of homework over a period for many years, has railroad expertise, has a plan to do this without needing lots of moving parts by government agencies, which can really slow things down. So it's a bit of a fortuitous situation that they found a route that, the agreements look like they're doable, to get this done.
Joe Sweeterman, Professor of Public Services and Director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Travel Tuesday, Part 1. United Airlines is adding flights to lesser-known international destinations as travelers seek more adventurous vacations, but the trend extends well beyond the carrier schedule. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of SheBuysTravel.com, based in Chicago. Now, what is the definition of a lesser-known international, or dare we say exotic, destination? Is this an Indiana Jones-style journey where the plane leaves Chicago and then there's a red line and a map tracing your destination to the top of an active volcano or someplace like that?
Well, I think that would be an awesome vacation, don't you? Well, it's actually, for most of us, it's a lot more or a lot less exotic, excuse me, than that. It's more about, it's kind of along the lines of the travel dupes, which we've talked about several times on Travel Tuesday. It's about finding a destination that still gives you the cultural experiences, the gorgeous beach, the terrific food, whatever it is that motivates you to travel to a place, but without the crowds, without the high prices, and just a sort of a more laid-back experience. For example, I was looking today. We have a great story on She Buys Travel about Zaragoza, which is the fourth largest city in Spain, which I bet a lot of people have never even heard of. It's in the Northeast. It's beautiful. It's got all the history of Barcelona without the crowds and without the high prices and without, frankly, the locals who wish you weren't there, which often happens in Barcelona these days. So I think that's what people are looking for, is the same kind of travel experience without the crowds, the money, and the hassle.
And United Airlines appears to be meeting this trend because they have announced service to Albania, Uzbekistan, South Korea, Vietnam, Georgia, as in the former Soviet Republic, Montenegro, and Kyrgyzstan, which offers you all the same experience of an overseas vacation with none of the vowels.
There you go. And, Albania is, my cousin just got back from Albania and said it's gorgeous, beautiful. She loved it there. But, it's not for everyone. Let's admit that. But these days, honestly, you just have to know what you're going to get when you get there. So you're not going to get lots of people who speak English. You're not going to maybe get drinking water that's safe to drink, things like that. So it's for slightly more adventuresome travelers. But, Albania has been one of the fastest growing tourist destinations over the last couple of years because it's affordable, has great culture and great food and lots of things to do. So if you're a slightly more adventuresome traveler, it's a great place to go, and you'll be able to get a nice vacation there for a fraction of what it would cost to go to Paris.
It also sounds like this is a trend in response to all of the wanderlust that we were working out in the wake of the COVID shutdowns in 2020 and 2021. You wanted to get that dream vacation in, and you go to Paris or you go to some Instagrammable spot in the world, and you spend a lot of time waiting in line, and then you leave feeling somewhat dissatisfied.
Exactly, which is why people are looking for places where they can get more for their money and a greater experience without all of those crowds. And it's really easy. And my advice to people who are a little nervous about the idea of, should I go to Albania? Find a tour company that goes to Albania. You're not going to get the super budget level experience that you could if you booked the trip on your own. But if you're a little nervous about it, find a guide who's going to take you around. There are tour companies that will take you, on a trip through Albania that, hits all the highlights without all the crowds. So there are ways to do it. Google Translate, speaks Bulgarian if you need to go to Bulgaria. So technology is going to help. There are tour companies that are going to help. Don't assume that just because you you don't know how to travel to a place that lots of Americans don't go, that it's not worth the effort.
Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief, SheBuysTravel.com in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, Wall Street continues to climb, but some long-term market measures are flashing a serious warning.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A set of reliable valuation indicators is signaling that stocks are not just overvalued, but extremely overvalued. Joining us to explain is Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, do the math for us. In what ways are the markets overvalued?
Well, there are a number of different ways of measuring valuation, but in general, it's you divide the price of the market or the level of the S&P 500, whatever you index you want to look at, and you divide it by measures of corporate worth, such as earnings and book value and sales per share and so forth. And regardless of the measure you look at, it turns out that the story told by those indicators is that the market is more overvalued today than at almost any other time in U.S. history. Now, the caution, the footnote I'll put to that is I've been saying this for several years now. The market has been overvalued for a number of years now, and the market keeps going up. But that doesn't mean that it'll go up forever. And I think it's worth pointing out to people and ourselves that the market is richly valued right now relative to almost any way of measuring a corporation's worth.
Well, it seems like it lends more credence to the belief that it's held by some that equities and the performance by equities is now has been uncoupled from the fundamentals for a very long time.
Well, that's right. There's always been a tenuous connection between how the Wall Street performs and how the regular economy does. But it has become, as you point out correctly, very disconnected in recent years to the point where, you know, I refer to it as the Main Street-Wall Street disconnect. I mean, it's you can have Wall Street, singing, cheerful tunes while the rest of us are just singing the blues. And I think that is a real story for the last several years. And all indications are that it's going to get even worse. So it's a real problem. I think it's beyond my my expertise, but I'd say from a socioeconomic point of view, it's not a healthy way of structuring a society.
What has happened in other times when the market was overvalued? Not to this extent, but was there a minor correction, a gradual correction, or a drastic correction?
Well, if you look on average, the market has fallen over the 10 years subsequently to anything close to the kind of overvaluation we're seeing right now. That doesn't mean the market is going to respond to overvaluation right away. The analogy I often repeat to my clients is that it's like a leaf in a hurricane. You don't know which way that leaf will go, but eventually gravity is going to win out. And I think right now the gravitational pull is for lower prices.
And at the end of the day, though, Mark, this could very much be another possibility, another instance of investors see what they want to see, the picture on the ground be damned.
Well, that's right. And this is why investing is so difficult. But, insofar as we use history as any guide, this is going to tell us that the odds of success are fairly low right now. Now, if we want to say that history no longer applies, that has a profound implication too. That just means we have no guidance one way or the other as to what's going to happen.
Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and Market Watch in Washington. Thank you for joining us today.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Deanna Roga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. The Noon Business Hour continues. The markets are higher. Joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street is J.J. Kinahan, Senior Vice President, CBOE Global Markets in Chicago. J.J., thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. The markets all up slightly. Treasury yields falling for a second day, and a rally in semiconductor stocks lifting the NASDAQ. And once again, it seems like investors are tuning out the latest war news from Iran.
Yeah, 100%, Rob. You know, you look at the VIX, which measures the volatility in the S&P 500, and it has really been stuck between 15.5 and 16. So what that tells me is that, you know, the market is taking everything in stride. Just for everyone's knowledge, 16 on the VIX would imply a 1% move on the S&P 500. And so I think that's, you know, not that big a deal one way or the other, let's be honest. So overall, what we're seeing is a market that is accepting that we're in a wait-and-see attitude as far as a lot of geopolitical tensions go. And one of the reasons we rallied this morning was because crude came down pretty significantly this morning. And so, you know, about 3%. And so that was well-received. And as you just said, the chip makers, a little bit out of favor yesterday. But today you have AMD, you know, up 5%, getting upgraded, et cetera. Marvel Technology up big again today. NVIDIA shaking off 7 consecutive days of downward movement, or longest since 2022, as they head into earnings tomorrow, having a nice day to the upside.
Now, some of the retailers are reacting in a big way to the latest in the trade rhetoric between the United States and Canada. Dick's Sporting Goods down more than 27%. That's following a disappointing earnings report. Walmart and Target under pressure, once again, by hit by worse-than-expected consumer confidence numbers, and also just the specter of price pressures once again due to this latest back and forth with our neighbors to the north.
Yeah, you know, and with Dick's really, as you said, just getting absolutely smacked today, to say the least. Excuse me. You also have stocks like Nike down, you know, 2.5%. ON Holdings, ONON, which many people are wearing those shoes, down, you know, almost 2.5%. So it's not only the stocks themselves, but all the companies that sell their goods through those stores are having a tough day today, too. Lululemon down almost 4% on the day. So 100%, the retailers are having a tough day. And then those companies that may rely on some of their goods to be made in foreign countries are having a very, very tough day along with them.
What's interesting is that some of the brands that you mentioned, and Dick's Sporting Goods in particular, this is back to school time. This is also back to activities time. This is when a lot of families are going to places like Dick's Sporting Goods and getting ready for fall activities, or just getting ready to stock up the dorm room.
Yeah, 100%. You would think that the soccer shin guards and football mouthpieces would be selling like hotcakes at the moment. But what they did say was a challenging footwear market. And so to me, that's really, really interesting in terms of, okay, you know, Nike was very, very dependent on them as a distributor. And so with that, they make a lot of their money on footwear traditionally. So the fact that either people are, you know, wearing their shoes for a longer period of time, switching to more off brands, I think that's really, and again, the companies we talked about after talking about Dick's there a moment ago, I think is really adding a challenge to them to try and figure out what's the next big thing. And, you know, you and I know for so many years, those people collecting sneakers, et cetera, really did continue to help the footwear demand. So that just seems to have slowed down significantly over the last year or so.
Tomorrow, we get a new reading on inflation. This is the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, the Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index. Now, you can do some back-of-the-napkin math using the Consumer Price Index and the Wholesale Price Index, both of which came in below expectations, to get a good idea of what the PCE figure is going to say. Does that have the potential to move markets tomorrow if it comes in below what analysts are expecting?
It may. I don't know that people are going to be, that's the one thing they, you know, sort of look at, if you will. You know, I do think that that will be very helpful. The main event tomorrow still remains, in my opinion, NVIDIA earnings, because that's going to set the tone, and not only for a lot of the AI industry in general, but it's also a favorite of retail traders. So a lot of people will be playing that and going into it. We see, you know, the last couple of days, a lot of people buying those $200 and $225 calls, expecting the stock to rally into earnings. So I'm paying more attention to that. But I also want to hear, you know, we have Jackson Hole starting on Friday. So it'll be interesting to hear how Fed Chairman Warsh actually positions PCE in his speech, if he decides to do so. I think a lot of people are anxious for him to do so and how he kind of views that number going forward. He hasn't talked as much about it as previous Chairman Powell did.
J.J. Kinahan, Senior Vice President, CBOE Global Markets in Chicago.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Travel Tuesday, Part 2, sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking. You don't need weeks to discover Route 66. Illinois offers a four-day adventure packed with history, nostalgia, and roadside Americana. WBBM's Lisa Fielding just returned from her mini Route 66 getaway, and you have all sorts of content locked and loaded, cataloging your adventure down to Route 66. But you mentioned something very interesting about who you encountered along the way. And right. That is, Route 66 is a major international bucket list destination.
It is. Okay, so let me just tell you, I'm a big road trip kid. I grew up in the 80s. I did road trips with my family all the time.
In the back of the station wagon?
Exactly, facing backwards.
Yes.
And getting car sick all the time. Anyway, Route 66 is celebrating its centennial this year, as we all might know. But, you know, not a lot of people have the 2 weeks, 3 weeks to take to go, as we say, peer-to-peer now, to Santa Monica. So Illinois, I was told, has the most attractions along the way than any other state. And I thought, well, can I do an Illinois trip? So we did it over 4 days. We went from Chicago all the way down to Granite City, which is just north of St. Louis, and back. And, you know, we're going to tell you all about the things that we found and the wonderful people and family and places and the sixth generation families who have businesses along the way. But as you mentioned, the biggest takeaway I got was we met people from around the world on every stop, and most of these people were from Europe, the Canary Islands, Italy, Spain, Netherlands, Belgium. I met all these different people who they say Route 66 and driving the mother road is a bucket list thing for people, mostly in Europe. Now, Europeans have a lot more holiday to take, I suppose, but they have a huge influence of pop culture, of Americana. The Cars movie, of course. Route 66, Chuck Berry, the song, the infamous song, the show back in the 50s and 60s. So I have found that a lot of Americans usually take the road as much as people from overseas come over here, and they really love it. And that was the big takeaway that I got from doing this myself, just through Illinois.
Now, if you're planning a Route 66 adventure, even if you're not going peer-to-peer, which I have to be honest, I'm kicking the tires on that, pun intended, for next summer's family vacation. I thought, oh, it's only 3 or 4 days out to Los Angeles. But you said 4 days and to go to St. Louis and back, and there's so much stuff to do along the way. What are some smart ways to plan your roadside adventure?
Okay, so there's a passport that you can get. We got it in Joliet at the museum there, and it has every stop along the way in Illinois, and there's almost 100 different attractions. We might have seen 30. So we only, you know, skim the surface in 4 days. But there, you're not in the car for more than maybe 40 minutes before you find another kitschy, fun roadside attraction that's been there for decades. An old diner, you know, Gemini Giant, who's been there since the 60s. He represents the space race back in the 60s. He's in Wilmington. The Pink Elephant Antique Mall, which is in Livingston. I always talk about how something I learned was, did you know that Collinsville, which is just south of Springfield, is the horseradish capital of the world? They produce 60 to 80% of the world's horseradish. So we did a story on a local distiller who uses horseradish to instill vodka down there. So I found out all these interesting things about these wonderful cities that we don't even know about in our own state.
And then finally, you have the perfect accompaniment in a martini to go with your prime rib, the horseradish vodka.
Well, you can use it for Bloody Marys, I suppose, right?
That's a different topic entirely.
Yes, of course. But it was all these interesting things that I found out about these wonderful cities in Illinois, and we're going to do a series about it. We're going to bring you all the different people and attractions and businesses that we found along the way, and that's coming up in the fall. And it was a really fun road trip. It's great for families because there's all these kitschy, fun, nostalgic kind of things that you can stop along the road. And I say take the trip with your girls. Now, going all the way to California is a big commitment. It's about 2 to 3 weeks, they say, to be able to stop at every single thing. But if you don't have that time, Illinois is the place to go because you're going to have so many things to see, you know, in a short 3 to 4 days.
Just go to the Mississippi River. Lisa Fielding, thank you for joining us. You will hear her at, of course, 3 o'clock in the afternoon when I hand the baton to Lisa for the afternoon news update. It's 12:44 on the Noon Business Hour. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, why next year's big international trip starts now.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Planning a big exotic international trip for next spring or summer. It requires some time, careful budgeting, and an early start. Joining us to explain why you should really start now is Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors based in Scottsdale, Arizona. The website travelbta.com. Angie, thank you for joining us today. Now, you're a travel planner, and if you're going to an international destination that is off the beaten path, when do you, as the professional, begin your work?
Right. I highly recommend planning 6, 9, and sometimes 12 months in advance.
And what are some of the reasons why you really have to stretch out that travel planning process?
Well, it allows you to be more strategic. And in any event, the best options always go first, especially for families traveling and competing for spring break and summer travel.
And then what are some of the other factors, especially when you're going overseas, as far as making sure you have all of your administrative ducks in a row?
Yes. I mean, I always like to remind people to renew their passports, or if it's your first passport, to get those in advance. It's always going to give you peace of mind. And sometimes our government can be delayed in getting passports expedited. But of course, there is that added service that I recommend so that you do have a good way to track along the way how soon you will receive your passports once they've been submitted.
And then you also have to be give yourself plenty of time to make sure you're up to your host country's health and safety regulations.
True. If you're traveling on safari, you really want to look into vaccinations and medications and just, you know, finding that extra time to fit into the planning process, to meet with a physician, to really go over your options, because there is some things might be mandatory and other things might be a personal choice.
And then, of course, you know, you have to lock down your hotels or potentially ground transportation. And those two elements of your trip often work hand in glove. And you got to make sure both are available when you actually get there.
I agree. There's a huge advantage to securing your lodging before the next calendar year. I almost always see prices go up. And again, if you're booking flexible rates, you have the opportunity to change your mind in the future or to look to see if something's more competitive. And Europe accommodations, especially for families, are very different than in the U.S. It's much more difficult to secure connecting rooms in other countries. And for that reason, there's a very limited availability. So the early bird gets the worm when it comes to planning early and making confirmation towards your travel, especially if you're traveling during peak season for a particular destination.
Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors based in Scottsdale. Find her online at travelbta.com.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.